Yes, the same kind of story seems to come down from long ago. Two friends having coffee together when something flies by their window. It might be out on that lawn, which is wide, at least half of a playing field. Because there's no explaining what your imagination can make you see and feel. Somebody wants me to know you're hypnotized.
From the City of Angels, Premier Radio Network presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
His name is Dr. Stephen Greer, and a long time ago, he developed the Disclosure Project, a not-for-profit research project working to fully disclose the facts about UFOs, extraterrestrial intelligence, and also classified advanced energy and propulsion systems. He has devoted his time and his life to this project. In a moment, Dr. Stephen Greer. Some people I'm working on a project with had set up a meeting for me for November 11th. So the meeting was set up for 11:11, and they set it for 11 o'clock, and it was on the 11th floor, if you can believe that. Dr. Stephen Greer is the founder, CEO of Space Energy Access Systems, and also the founder and director of the Disclosure Project. He is an emergency physician and former chairman of the Department of Emergency Medicine at Caldwell Memorial Hospital. Dr. Greer is a lifetime member of Alpha Omega Alpha, the nation's most prestigious medical honor society. He's appeared on several national programs, of course, including Coast to Coast, and also the Larry King Show, CBS, the BBC, and NTV in Japan. Dr. Greer has been supervising a worldwide search for alternative energy sources, specifically those known as zero-point or over-unity devices, with the plan to identify and develop systems which will eliminate the need for fossil fuels. And I hope he's successful. We're going to talk about several things tonight with Dr. Stephen Greer. Of course, his Disclosure Project, and of course, SeaPower.com, the company that he is heading up. So welcome to Coast to Coast. Stephen, how are you, my friend? Good to talk with you again.
Good to hear from you. Thank you. It's good to be here.
I wanted to ask you this, Stephen, if we can. Let's just go back just a little bit for a moment.
Sure.
When you developed the Disclosure Project and you started to put together the people and the puzzle to try to at least get the government to reveal to us some more information, what happened in your life to do that? I mean, here you are, a doctor, a medical doctor. All of a sudden, you're involved in this project. What happened? How did that happen?
Well, you know, it was evolved over many years. As a young kid, actually, when I was 8 or 9 years old, I saw one of these UFOs not far from where I was, where I grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina. And this coincided with a time when my uncle, my mom's oldest brother, was a senior project engineer for the lunar module. He helped design the lunar module that took Neil Armstrong to the moon. So as a young man, I became, of course, very interested not only in space, but these unusual things that people call UFOs. And that became a lifelong interest. Back in 1990, some things happened where I had another sighting of these objects and began to look into it again and concluded that not only were they real, which, of course, I always knew they were, but that it was time for us to do two things. One, we started the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, or CSETI, and a project of which is the Disclosure Project. And we had two purposes. One was to go out and begin to look all over the world where these objects were being reported and attempt to make contact with the objects or signal to them, and we did this. And this very quickly got the attention of people like the head of Army Intelligence and friends of the U.S. President and the CIA director and other people, because even though a lot of people thought this was implausible, what had happened is that we succeeded in basically uncovering a bit of the Rosetta Stone, if you will, of how to contact and communicate with these objects. So from 1990 to 1993, when we launched that project of contact and research in real time all over the world, what evolved from that was a network of people who came to us who said, you know, you're on the right track, but more than that, here's what's already being done in ultra-secret, in fact, illegally managed covert projects. And at first I thought this was not terribly plausible until, you know, first a few of these government and military insiders became a dozen, mm-hmm. and then 40, and then over 100 by 2001, and now around 450 to 500, and they keep being identified on a weekly basis. In fact, I'm going to share with your listeners tonight some new information from some of these people who have come forward from the aerospace industry that my uncle was involved with for his entire career. So little by little, as it were, from age 8 till age 49, which is what I am now, this whole matter became something of tremendous consuming interest. And so much so, of course, that you know, by 1993 and 94, I was doing briefings for President Clinton's CIA director and his senior people and the folks at the Pentagon who wanted to know about a lot of these projects that were being managed and that were looking into this whole area of aerospace technology and advanced propulsion and energy systems and reconnaissance of extraterrestrial vehicles, or ETVs, which is actually what they're called in those circles. But a lot of people, of course, initially couldn't believe it, and I didn't initially myself,
yeah.
that folks like the CIA director were flat out denied access to these sort of projects and that they were so compartmentalized and it was so Byzantine and so, quite frankly, rogue and illegal in how they were being managed that very senior members of our government were being blocked from knowing about it. So we had a group of people that became sort of ad hoc advisors and briefers, if I can use that word, for folks in the Congress and the Senate. And, you know, I met with people in the Senate Intelligence Committee and people who, for example, the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency and the head of intelligence for the Joint Staff and many of these other sorts of senior positions. And so it was really a long process, and where we are today is sending, we're basically just have an enormous database of documents and insiders, whistleblowers, if you want to call them that.
Sure.
And it has now expanded to being able to identify specific corporations and individuals and institutions that are running these projects and who, quite frankly, and quite tragically, are running the ship of state into the iceberg. So, you know, we're trying to steer the Titanic away from that, but unfortunately there are some people who are just hell-bent on the current course we're on, and we can talk more about that later.
Did you sense a frustration with some of these heads of departments, for example, Stephen, who were not given the access that they probably thought they were entitled to? I mean, were they frustrated?
Well, of course. I mean, you know, here I am, an emergency trauma physician in his 30s, sitting with a CIA director, a current
yeah.
CIA director, who's virtually in tears by the end of this three-hour meeting because he's saying to me that, well, you know, we would like to have this information disclosed, and the president is interested, and we're interested, but how do we disclose what we don't have access to? And I'll give you, for example, back in 1997, we got together quite a few members of Congress and senior staffers and brought in about a dozen of these military and intelligence witnesses that we had identified. And the people can go on our website, disclosureproject.org, and see a lot of that testimony and get it. And basically, I went over after this one meeting with all the congressmen the next day and ended up briefing an admiral who was head of the J-2 position, the head of intelligence, Joint Chiefs of Staff. And prior to the meeting, and this is a very interesting little bit of detail, I had given this man, through my military advisor and our points of contact to him, code numbers and code names of specific projects that were current dealing with this subject, and we have them. And, of course, he took them, and he made inquiries, and sure enough, he hit one of these highly compartmentalized and very shadowy operations, And they, of course, at that point, couldn't deny their existence.
Exactly.
And they said, turned to the admiral and said, well, sir, you don't have a need to know. And he said, what do you mean I don't have a need to know? I'm the head of intelligence for the joint staff. And this is, you know, now, I'm sitting, this is being directly related to me by someone at that level.
Yeah.
I'm sitting at the Pentagon. So, you know, it turned my life, quite frankly, upside down, and it's extraordinary. But what I learned from it is that the assumptions that people make when they say the government is hiding this from us, well, it's true. There are highly classified and illegally run cells, if you want to call them, or compartmentalized projects that deal with this. But, you know, 99% of the people at the Pentagon or the agency or the NSA have no knowledge of this subject. And, in fact, they're more likely to listen to this show to find out what's going on than in any other way, quite frankly. Tragically, this extends all the way up to the level of the presidency and to senior members of Congress who are supposed to know. Now, at this point in history, and this, of course, has evolved from the 1940s to the present day, the real action is really both transnational and corporate. The big action is in operations at Lockheed and Northrop, contractors for these big covert projects, Science Applications International Corporation and people. I know who is on their board and who's been involved in those projects. So there are large multi-billion-dollar operations dealing with this subject, but they're very, very shadowy and very hard to unravel. In 1994, I was meeting with Senator Byrd of West Virginia as a chief counsel and an attorney who had a top-secret clearance and subpoena power, and I had a private meeting with him at the Senate Appropriations Committee meeting room, and
yes.
He said, look, this subject, he knew it existed. He says, but with a top-secret clearance and a subpoena, I have not been able to penetrate it. He said, and I'm quoting here, this man said, you are dealing with the varsity team of all super-secret projects. Good luck. And that's kind of how the meeting ended. So, you know, that was January of 94 or February of 94. So it's been quite a journey, and I can say that it's been in turn frustrating for me, but also quite enlightening to learn how power is exercised, who has it, and what's the agenda. And this is really what we need to talk about. What is the agenda, and how do the people who are listening to this show affect its outcome?
That's right. And how can we change it before it's too late? You know, these 400-plus government, military, and intelligence witnesses who have continued to help feed you information have got to be heroes, I would guess. Don't you think?
They are. And I tell people, if they get on our website, disclosureproject.org, and see these guys, you know, I had a filmmaker and a media person in London contact me last week who said he had no idea this sort of evidence and this sort of smoking gun and deep throat whistleblower sort of testimony existed on this. And he was just completely, well, he was British, so he said he was gobsmacked. I laughed. And I said, well, you know, we're trying to move that out as best we can. And we continue to reach folks. For example, ABC News is doing a special on this that's going to air in February, as you know. And
yes.
But the main thing is that the people who are listening to shows like this, millions of people, need to understand there's action they can take to help that process. And if we don't act, you know, I mean, as it says, the old adage is, you know, the only thing that allows for evil to prevail is for good people to do nothing. And all we have to do is look back to World War II and the rise of Hitler and all that to see that is very true. So people do need to take responsibility, and we do need to protect our democracy. Eisenhower, who is one of my heroes, I mean, he was, of course, a conservative Republican, and I'm a very nonpartisan person, but he very was much hit the nail on the head when he said, you know, there is this military-industrial complex that will erode our security and will be a threat to our democracy if we're not vigilant. And, of course, one of our witnesses was an aide to President Eisenhower, Brigadier General Lovkin, who's an attorney in North Carolina, is one of our witnesses. And he was a young man at the time in 1959, 1960, and he personally saw the U.S. president getting UFO reports, handling some of the information, but also saw that he was specifically, and this is a five-star general, and a conservative Republican president being lied to and being blocked and denied into these corporate projects that had the technologies and were running with them. And he was very frustrated. And, you know, so this is a dysfunctional situation that goes all the way back at least into the 1950s.
See, they knew these, I think, multinational corporations, they knew these presidents would come and go.
Of course.
Every four or eight years, and that they're the ones that wanted to sustain themselves for a very long time.
That's right. And just like a CIA director comes and goes every two to 6 years, or the chairman of the joint staff. Or, you know, I personally sat at the Pentagon with the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency. Now, I have witnesses inside that agency, the DIA, who have handled sensitive material related to this subject. Yet when the general in charge of that agency made inquiries, the only thing he got, now I'm not kidding, I'm sitting here at the Pentagon with my military advisor, and the general gets up and walks over to his bookcase and takes a little E.T. doll off the bookcase and brings it over. He says, "This, Dr. Greer, is all I've ever gotten out of my inquiries into this subject. I've gotten nothing but laughter and ridicule." And this is a man who is the general in charge of the Defense Intelligence Agency at the time. So, you know, and yet I'm giving him documents and testimony from the DIA. So the whole thing is, to use the word dysfunctional is an enormous understatement, quite frankly.
Well, and the people you had involved, for example, in that May 9th, 2001 press conference, and unfortunately, because of the tragedy of 9/11, it took some of the thunder away, but I think you're now regrouping, Stephen, and the momentum is going to start again. But these are real people. They're not Hollywood actors.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're out there. They're government people, military people who decided, you know what? I'm not going to suppress this anymore, and they went forward.
That's right, and these are all people that we have their DD-214s, their discharge forms. We have multiple corroboration of their presence at places. Many of the categories of events, we have multiple witnesses and documents to corroborate what happened. So, you know, when people say, you know, where's the smoking gun? Where's the evidence? I said, well, we have it. You know, can you read English? I said that once to a scientist, and he laughed. I said, well, if you can read English, we have it. And if you can't, at least it's now been translated. The whole disclosure transcript book that we have, which is nearly 600 pages, has now been translated into French and is being distributed throughout the country of France right now. But I tell you, you know, on our website, disclosureproject.org, people can see this two-hour press conference, but also you can get either a one-hour or two-hour or four-hour videotape of all these military witnesses. And by the way, these are not people with a fuzzy blob over their face with a fake name.
No.
They're shown name, rank, and serial number, the whole nine yards.
The real McCoy.
And it isn't one or two of them. It's dozens and dozens and dozens of them.
Well, and they keep coming. And so are they still coming? Are you're getting new people who want to disclose?
Yes. In fact, in the last week, we have had several, one of whom is an important aerospace top-secret Lockheed contractor, and I am going to share with you verbatim what he has shared with us, and I'm going to ask for other people to come out to corroborate what I'm going to share. It's a very important bit of information.
When we make the switch at the half here, Stephen, and then we'll come back and talk about that, what took some of them so long? I mean, here we are. You had this major disclosure project in 2001. You're still getting more and more people. What's getting them to realize, I'm going to go public?
Well, there are many issues. Number one, I think the biggest one was that there was a leadership vacuum. These were people who didn't know each other for the most part. They were isolated. They needed, in a sense, a support structure, and that's what we created. And I sort of created the leadership to do it, but they're the ones who really stuck their necks out. I mean, I tell people I'm just a country doctor here in Virginia who got involved with this. But these guys who had and have, in many cases, top secret clearances, really needed the support. And when there became this critical mass of a few of them and then dozens of them and then, you know, 400 or 500 of them, they felt safe to do it. They felt they wouldn't be ridiculed. And they trusted us not to mesh in a whole bunch of speculative, crazy stuff, that we kept it very oriented towards the testimony, the documents, the evidence, and that was our agreement with them, and they trusted us to do it.
Thank you. What I have liked about you, Stephen, in the years that I heard you even talking with Art Bell, was this no-nonsense approach that you have taken to this very serious subject. And I think it is so important now that approach comes forward. And, you know, we'll do as much as we can for you here on this program to do that.
We appreciate your help.
Dr. Stephen Greer, our guest, will be back in a moment. We'll talk more about some of these new disclosure witnesses. You just mentioned an aerospace contractor. Let's chat with him about that when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.
Tried so hard and now taking a car and I lose you. All I want to do. So try.
To time travel? Go back to past shows on Streamlink. Sign up online at coasttocoastam.com.
What I'm trying to say is what I'm trying to do.
Somewhere out there, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
And our very special guest tonight, Dr. Stephen Greer, the Disclosure Project. We're going to also talk about his search for alternative energy sources right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest tonight, Dr. Stephen Greer. Stephen, you're talking to us about an aerospace contractor who I assume has come to you then very, very, very soon in this disclosure project, or was it much later?
No, this has all been in the last week.
Just the last week?
Right, which is why, you know, I feel it's important to share. And he specifically wanted me to share it because it's time-sensitive. An evolving situation, when you'll see why in a moment. I think it's important for people to hear this. And I think others listening, remember, one of the ways that we've been able to corroborate things is that we will go out to the public in a show like this and say, look, if there are other people who know about this event or this project, please contact me personally through disclosureproject.org, our website, and we will, of course, work with you in whatever way we can. And so it's important that this kind of networking happen. This is really, it's very grassroots, you know. I mean, it's not as if, you know, somehow we waved a magic wand and all this happened. It's really a lot of hard work and networking, and we rely on the public and people out there listening who are concerned and interested in this issue to make this happen. And that's really how it has happened, really.
Absolutely. And again, disclosureproject.org is the way to get back to you, right?
Correct.
Okay. Now, this person, this individual, how did he come to you?
Well, he approached us actually through the website, and then we've gone back and forth and communicated with him. And he is a guy who with Lockheed Martin. Do you want me to just share what he told us?
Absolutely, Stephen.
It's really quite good. He said it better than I could have it. It's interesting because in one of the follow-on conversations that we had, he said, you know, he says, we are watching this project, meaning the Disclosure Project, with great interest and may elect to reveal more identities later. I am very new to this sort of thing. Before a few weeks ago, I was pretty certain UFOs did not exist as bona fide extraterrestrials and thought people who came forward were touched. Now he doesn't take it so lightly. It's very interesting because of the project that he has now gotten intelligence on. So this man is a career aerospace guy, like my uncle was. Mm-hmm. And what he says is, I'll just share this with you. He says, part of me is deathly afraid to come forward with this information, but I feel it is my patriotic duty to do so. I have spent a great deal of my professional career with Lockheed Martin, including an extended period at the facility in Marietta, Georgia. Much of my work is classified, and I categorically will not divulge my identity publicly at this time. I am too concerned for the safety of my family and those of my colleagues. And, you know, which is understandable.
Right,
of course.
That is.
As you may know, Lockheed Martin has been involved in multiple stages of the Cassini mission to Saturn. Images from the craft are processed and analyzed at the Space Science Institute in Boulder, Colorado, which is where my main contacts are located. To get right to the point, some of these images have revealed the presence of not one, but several large craft of non-terrestrial origin. I have sketched them on, and the sketch is of has been directly observed by the people he works with. I don't want to name them.
Mm-hmm.
The angles present on the craft are such that they would not generally occur in nature, and therefore it is clear they are not asteroids or other debris caught in the gravitational pull of the planet. And listen to the description. It's fascinating. The objects are ridged saucers, classic flying saucer shapes, with several spoked ridges radiating from the center to create a near prismatic shape. Seen from above, they have a shape somewhat like a spider's orb web. What I refer to as spokes do not appear to be separate structures, but are formed from the skin of the craft. The description is as if it is like a bat's wing. If you can imagine the skin of a bat covering the fingers that give structure to the wings.
And that's a good analogy, too.
Okay,
you can picture
it's very
that.
Interesting. It's an excellent description. The photos are clear. I do not know much more about these objects or craft, except their presence was not entirely unexpected. This is very interesting. And that they have not caused any particular alarm in the various agencies. But the suppression of the images was followed as a matter of due course. And it goes on. I don't want to take a lot of time because I think it's not polite to read, but that gives an idea of the sort of intelligence. Now, this is an ongoing thing that's just been imaged, there is something that's out on the web now that's a Cassini image that is pretty certain to be an artifact. This, however, what he's describing is clearly artificial structures moving there. Now, it's interesting because he says this was not unexpected. And what I point out to people is that that's because ever since we've been sending anything up into space, we have been encountering these objects, including the lunar landing.
Oh, they're following us, aren't they?
Yeah. And, and they, of course, are watching everything that we're doing as civilization,
sure.
And obviously are concerned about, in my opinion, the development of weapons in space, the development of weapons of mass destruction, and a civilization that is still killing millions of our own people in warfare, going out into space at this stage of our social and, if you will, spiritual evolution. So, but at any rate, the fact that, of course, he stumbled across this fairly new. He wasn't someone who was involved in this sort of thing until very recently. But it was interesting. He picked up on the fact that it was not unexpected that they would encounter it, which, of course, is what I would expect, having now many, many different witnesses from various agencies and corporations who have corroborated encounters with these objects, not only in near-Earth orbit, but also near the Moon, Mars, and some of the outer planets during reconnaissance and space probes and what have you.
And what he says, even though this information is new about Cassini and Saturn, what he says is not unlike then what some of these other witnesses have told you in the past.
Exactly. It's an identical and corroborative pattern. And I think that it only makes sense, of course, that that would be the case. For example, we have a couple of witnesses who were involved in the lunar orbiter. Of course, this was the mapping and the probes we sent up to the moon before we actually landed in July of 1969. And one of our witnesses was at Langley, where there was a secret facility run by the National Security Agency at the time that had a multinational staffing, but super secret, where they were taking images and sequestering them that were showing objects and artificial structures already on the moon. And these are lunar orbiter pictures back in the mid-60s before we landed in 69. So, and it was processed, it was very routine, and this witness we have was in there and saw this and worked with a man who pulled out these enormous pictures that he was working on and processing and showed him these structures. So, of course, that witness is in the disclosure book and in the videos that people can see at disclosureproject.org. But the way that was handled and the way this man now, of course, years later, I mean, we're talking 40 years later, is describing this is very, very, very similar.
How were you able, because he hasn't disclosed who he is, and I can understand.
No, he has. We do know that.
Oh, you do know who he is. You just can't tell us.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's good, because I was going to say, you feel he is authentic then.
Oh, yes, and there's no doubt about that. But what he's wanting us to do, and the reason I'm sharing this, is that there are other people who I'm sure have knowledge of this and similar handling of the subject that we would like to come forward and approach us. And I invite people to do that and to let us know if they have further information on this and related matters.
Well, you talk about the role of some of these corporations, Stephen. What are they doing? I mean, are they trying to duplicate these objects? Are they developing systems that may be somewhat related? What is their exact role?
Well, they have multiple roles, depending on which corporation. The real action, the very important action that's been going on since the 40s and 50s, and which frustrated President Eisenhower so much, as well as President Clinton and others, it's an equal opportunity sort of covert program in terms of rogue action until recently. Now, I don't know if you want to get into this.
Well, let's talk a little bit about it, sure.
This is difficult. And anyone who knows me knows that I am very nonpartisan. But quite frankly, not the current president, but those behind him, are in the core of this group and are in the core of the agenda.
And it is the
most dangerous situation the United States has been in since its founding.
And it could be very possible that he doesn't even know what's going on with this.
Well, the problem is, this is very difficult for me to say because two-thirds of my people who support me are conservative Republicans. But if we put George W. Bush and that administration back in there until 2009, we are almost certainly going to put ourselves further down the path of a global militaristic agenda that's going to end up with a tragedy of unspeakable proportions. Unfortunately, the current president, now his father is deeply involved in these issues. Cheney is, and Rumsfeld is. I have documents and people to establish this. Now, people are going to be disturbed when they hear this. You know, I always ask people, do you really want to hear the truth or not? I feel like, what is that movie, A Few Good Men, when Jack Nicholson says, you can't handle the truth.
Yeah.
But I have to tell you that what I have learned about the current administration being hijacked, quite frankly, particularly this president, and in many quarters of the Republican Party, 99.9% of them don't know about this stuff, but they have been hijacked and used, and I quite frankly believe subverted to an agenda that is anathema to American democracy.
Well, don't you think that even if a different administration comes in, that those same power mongers will be able to flex their influence?
No, not in the same way. Here's the difference. Yeah, Clinton, for example, was completely forced out of this picture. Now, he didn't do anything to fix it. And here's where my beef with the Clinton administration is. I'm an equal opportunity, you know, I'm going to come down on all sides of this, and I'll probably make everyone angry at me. But I was extremely disappointed that President Clinton, who was specifically briefed by our team on this and given full evidence and was asked to take executive action to fix this problem before it was too late, quite frankly, didn't have the fortitude to do it. But that's very different than actually being the fox that's guarding the hen house, getting in the hen house. And that's what we have with the current administration. It is the greatest threat to the American democracy, to our environment, and to the future of this planet, I believe, since the United States was founded. And my mother's family were some of the original founders of the United States. So, look, I'm no flaming liberal by any means, but I will tell you that if this particular administration is not put on a shorter leash, we are in for some major troubles. And forget about 9/11 and forget about the Iraq War. We're talking about things that will be 100 times worse than that.
Well, I'm going to have to ask you, Stephen, to tell me what you're talking about, though. What in specifics here?
I'm talking about the fact that the Bush administration, not the president himself, because he's frankly, in my opinion, W is a terrible victim of a long-term agenda that involves a cabal or a group of people that include his father, Cheney, and Rumsfeld, and many other people, including these corporate lackeys I'm talking about, that have manipulated things to cause the current president to make decisions that have been disastrous. In other words, I hate to use the word patsy, but he has been ill-served, profoundly ill-served by those people. The problem is, if he's reelected, those same people are going to be in there.
Okay, but how does this equate to what you investigate with disclosure, Zero Point Energy? That's what I need. I need to know where this tie-in is.
The tie-in is that the people who are in the current situation with the current administration are people who have long-term ties to the cover-up of the UFO issue, the illegal management of these corporate and military and intelligence operations.
Okay.
They are the people.
All right, let's,
it's been hidden in plain sight.
Let's assume that's true.
And that is, well, it is true.
But this has been going on now for 60 years with various groups of people.
But not at that level of power. See, it's one thing if it's covert power and it's being manipulated behind the scenes. It's another thing if that covert power emerges and seizes overt power of the executive branch of the U.S. government. And that's what we have. And I can't say it more clearly. It's a dangerous situation. And, you know, I have very good friends who know what I just told you. And they are lifelong Republicans who raise money for the Republican Party. And they have told me, you're absolutely right. I can't vote for Kerry, but I will not pull the lever for Bush and Cheney after they have learned what is going on. Now, that is an astonishing thing. I mean, no less a figure than Dwight Eisenhower's son, who's a lifelong Republican, came out and said as much, but not related to this issue. But a lot of the insiders know it is related to this issue, that there is a transnational agenda that is global, militaristic, very dangerous, and it is ramped up. It has been ramped up tremendously in the last 3 or 4 years, and I think it's going to get worse unless the American people learn about this and make a decision for a change, and it needs to happen.
What do you think on the gross downside of all this? What do you think could happen?
Frankly, I think that there's this wonderful Chinese expression that says, unless we change directions, we're likely to end up where we're going. Quite clearly, the current direction that these people have forced America into is going to lead to a much worsened terrorism situation. But eventually, the agenda, now remember, this is what Wernher von Braun's spokesperson reported to us, Dr. Rosin, that Wernher von Braun, the inventor of the rocket, told her on his deathbed. I have multiple other corroborating witnesses who have been in the CIA and the Air Force NRO office and others who have corroborated this, that what their long agenda has been is to go from the Cold War to global terrorism. Now, remember, we reported this in the Disclosure Project before 9/11, and that would then be replaced with hoaxing a threat from outer space and unifying the world around a global military response that would push us into sort of an Armageddon scenario out in space. It sounds insane, but if you had told someone that 9/11 was going to happen the way it did, or the way they say it did, people would have said that you were, you know, smoking something.
Yeah, but
the fact is that this agenda has been outlined since the 60s, and there are people in the current administration who have ties back to the 60s and 70s, literally, being involved in setting this agenda. Now, do most Republicans know that? Absolutely not, but they need to know it because their party has been used and hijacked by these interests, and it is very, very dangerous. Now, in the past, let's say back in the 50s and 60s, there was sort of more of an equal sort of bipartisan infiltration, but that has shifted. It has shifted radically over the last 5 to 10 years, and this is a real tragedy. You know, I sat with Barry Goldwater. I don't know if you remember Senator Goldwater.
Oh, sure do.
Who ran for president in 64, and great guy. I sat at his home personally and spoke with him for an entire afternoon about
it. There was a one television commercial that LBJ laid out there that wiped him out, and that was that picture
right.
of that nuclear explosion.
Let me tell you, Barry Goldwater was a big supporter of what we were trying to do. I have a letter from him.
Right, I remember
now,
that.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Now, he and I talked about this, and he told me then, and this is 1994 or 95, I can't remember, back in the mid-90s, and Barry, Senator Goldwater said to me, he said, well, Dr. Greer, he says, you know that my party, which, you know, he was sort of the founder of the modern conservative wing of the GOP, he says, it's been hijacked by these sort of interests. And I looked at him. I said, well, how much of that do you know about? He says, well, it absolutely has. And it was interesting to hear his take on it as sort of the scion and sort of this big lion figure within the Republican establishment bewailing this to me. Now, I've never said this publicly. We talked a lot about UFOs and about covert programs and folks he knew that he was going to try to help get to help us, who ended up bashing him in the head, quite frankly. They were furious with him. But you want me to name them?
I want you to hold that, though. We're going to take this break. We'll come back. I want to talk to you a little bit more about this, Stephen, because, you know, if almost every president, though, has been had a blanket put over his head, what makes you think the same's not going to happen if someone else gets elected, for example? I'll be back with that, and we'll talk about alternative energy sources when we come right back.
The After Dark Newsletter. Subscribe now by calling toll-free 1-888-727-5505.